Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, and I'm David Todd. Dave, it's been a season of giving in this offseason. Boy, we got a list of things to talk about again on Friday. You figure OTAs end up, this is going to be the quiet time. There is no quiet time.
No, man, yesterday, David, I was like, this whole week, I've been like a kid in a candy store with all the videos, the interviews on Steelers Live at 4. Of course, OTAs wrapped up. There were more interviews yesterday. We've got a lot to cover today.
Dave, look, I know we don't like to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I got to give you huge points. Great job setting up the interview with Bill Nickel of Outer Limits, the guy who's the trainer for Ziggy Hood. Those of you who didn't get a chance to hear the Tuesday podcast, Bill was joined us for the last 15 minutes. You might want to listen to that. Some really interesting stuff talking about Ziggy's workout program and what he's done. Now the media has really picked up on this. I know they picked this up from your website and from our interview. So great stuff there. Mark Cabali wrote about it today. Just some more information. Most of the stuff we went through, but congratulations. Nice job breaking that story. And it's been really, the Pittsburgh media has been all over it the past couple days.
Yeah, and you know, that was just something that started to surface on YouTube and all like that. It's just one of those things you follow up on. I thought it would make for a great interview. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. And I got some good info out of that interview as well. And it's not often that you see from behind the curtain that angle. And Bill wrote us back too and said he enjoyed being on the show.
Yeah, you know, when you and I are captivated by the interview, you know those are generally the good ones. We don't have to do much talking. We just do the listening. And Bill did a great job. Thanks again for being with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Outer Lim, L-I-M. And in some of this stuff, in Dave's article and in the podcast, we talk about where he's located. If anybody's out there, kind of the father or mother of a high school football player or just an athlete who wants to enhance their training, that might be a guy to go check out and see what they're doing up there. It sounds like great stuff. And obviously, we talked about this on Tuesday. Ziggy's one of the guys. What's come out of this is Ziggy realizes himself he didn't have a great year. Mark wrote that Ziggy looked at all the film, every play he played last year, and he realized he wasn't getting off the ball well. He was easy to take off his feet. And so this is what inspired him to become a better football player and go do the work necessary. You can see in the, you know, we'll see how it translates on the field, but certainly the visual effect is, there is an impact. You just look at this guy, his body is different. The things he's doing athletically are amazing. And Steelers fans have to be excited that he's out there really wanting to improve as a football player.
Absolutely. We've talked about Ziggy quite a bit over the, since the season, and it wasn't a bad season for him. It was mediocre, and really the Steelers weren't horrible against the run. But there's little things like getting off the ball quicker, the explosion that we talked about with Bill there. Those are little things, the hand fighting, the hand work that he's working on. I tell you, I'm going to be watching Ziggy real close, especially in preseason here, because I think this is a guy now that has himself possibly a huge season on tap, at least one of the biggest ones that we've seen from him. He'll definitely be a full-time starter this year, and I'm expecting good things out of him now after that interview.
Yeah, me too. It's exciting stuff. I think he is guy. You know, we talk about breakout guys. Ziggy's a guy I looked at. We both looked to kind of really take a step forward this year as he has a full-time role, going to be a starter, expecting big things. For those of you who hear a little background noise here, just as an FYI, I was telling Dave, I'm up in New York for a surprise birthday party. I hope the guy whose birthday party it is doesn't hear the podcast between 5 and 8 tonight before the surprise happens. But it's like doing the radio show on site in the bar. So there's a little background noise. I apologize for that, but hopefully the audio's strong enough. Dave, let's work a little bit backwards, excuse me, on the stuff that was coming out. Yesterday was a big day. the final day of OTAs. We talked about Tuesday. Mike Tomlin gave the guys essentially the day off. They went to Dave and Buster's. They worked Wednesday and Thursday. Thursday, Kevin Colbert came out, and he held court again. And we haven't really seen him do that other than kind of at in Indianapolis at the Combine and then at the draft. And now OTAs wrap up, and it's kind of the third time to hear Kevin Colbert, and he had a lot to say.
Absolutely. It was a great 20-minute interview on Moving the Chains on Sirius XM Radio. You know, we didn't learn anything that, David, that me and you have been saying this whole offseason as far as Mike Wallace goes. But, Colbert has toted this company line ever since Art Rooney said at the end of the season that Mike Wallace was going to be a priority to sign to a long-term deal. And that's exactly what Colbert reiterated yesterday. Kerwin actually started off when talking about Mike Wallace, Kerwin was one of those guys that was proclaiming, "Oh, Mike Wallace is going to be gone," you know. And he asked Kevin Colbert, you had to be a little nervous there. And Colbert said, as cool as a cucumber, not really. He said his mindset was always to, look at franchising the player, because economically they couldn't have handled it from a standpoint with that high franchise tag number. So, they did what they knew that they could do, and that's put the first-round tender on him. They evidently weren't very scared that he was going to be signed away for the first-round draft pick price there. He talks about how Mike Wallace has always been a priority, and that he's come in, he came in a couple weeks ago, which Mike Tomlin let us know there and picked up his playbook and all. And he says, hey, we're continuing to work with his agent Buzz Cook and trying to finalize a long-term deal that Mike wants to be here. We want Mike here. And it's just a matter of hammering out the details now. So as far as Mike Wallace goes, that was what we've been saying all along on top of it.
Yeah, Wallace Watch has kept us busy and given us hours of fodder for conversation on the show since the end of February. And, Kevin Colbert, just what you said, he's stuck to the company line. I still am of the belief that they probably don't get this deal done. I'm not sure we're going to see Mike Wallace in a Steeler uniform in 2013. But we're certainly going to see him lining up on the outside in Denver in 2012 on opening night. But yeah, Mike Wallace, and as you said, this is still news to the national media, not that much news to the Pittsburgh folks. But Dave, the other things that kind of came out of these conversations, we've heard the injury updates, and it's basically Worlds and Harrison. We actually now know a little bit more of the details.
To wrap up the Wallace thing real quick, everybody keep in mind the 15th is the that extra, where they can drop back that tender and all like that. They're not going to do that. I thought that they could do that after the 15th, but I think it's a one-day deal, and they should have already notified him if they were going to reduce his tender. That's not going to happen. I reread the CBA this morning. I believe that has to be done on the 15th if they're going to lower that tender. But to go on forward, like you said about the injuries and all, what else has come out there? Jason Worlds, we finally found out, he's had that wrap on that left arm, wrist, hand, whatever you want to say. Well, it ends up he tore a ligament in that left hand last season, and he had to have a procedure done. And I'm going to need your Yale education here, David. Scapulounate dysostosis, I think, is what a procedure was called, to be exact. That's what Keith Butler said yesterday, and he basically further explained the injury to say that basically you have several bones in it, and a ligament tore between those two bones, and instead of having it fused together like they did years ago, like Keith Butler himself has had that done in the wrist, they have to repair the ligament and reconstruct the ligament. That takes time to heal for the player to get the full range of motion. Now, the good news is that Worlds, delicately here, be ready by the start of training camp. Don't expect them to partake in mini camp next week. And Butler said, hey, we'll see what happens. These wrist injuries are kind of funny and all like that. Don't be surprised if World starts training camp on the active PUP list.
Yeah, that's what I thought was the interesting thing. I heard Worlds himself say that. Didn't know if he would be ready the first day of camp, or he'd start on PUP. That's just a numbers thing, a something in terms of having enough bodies to make sure they have enough guys to practice, making sure they hit all the requirements necessary. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but that did raise a small red flag for me.
Yeah, and see, the formality with the PUP, once a player starts practicing in minicamp, if he has a setback, you know, you can't put him on the PUP at that point.
Right, right.
So they want to be delicate with him, and I think that's what you're going to see them do early on in training camp with him. Hey, it's going to be more reps for Chris Carter, and the other linebackers that are going forward there. So James Harrison is the other name that they talked about. I speculated last week wrongly, and I'm glad I did. Of course, we'll see how this plays out going forward, that he might have missed time with his back. But it seems like he has fluid on that knee. He evidently, according to Kabali, is working out on some elliptical-type stair-climber-type equipment and all like that. They expect him to be at minicamp next week. I wouldn't be surprised to hear him being a little limited next week as well. I think the main goal, as Keith Butler pointed out, is say, hey, we don't win world championships right now. We're going to win that in training camp. So I would expect to hear news of Harrison kind of being babied next week, even if he works at all, you know, next week. So those are your two primary things. I think there were some other bumps and bruises. I think Wesley Saunders has a boot on a leg of his, and another player, Connor Dixon, I think, is wearing a boot too. But, you know, we got out of OTA sessions, David, without any major injuries, so that in itself made OTAs a smashing hit this year.
David, that's the thing about Harrison. This is a guy – he's an older guy, and you corrected me there before we got on air. I was thinking he was in his early 30s. He's 34. I mean, this is a guy, even though he hasn't played a ton of football, he got a late start. Obviously, everybody knows the story about the Ravens and the Steelers both cutting him and being on the practice squads. So, you know, even though he hasn't played a ton of football, it's a physical position. He plays a physical game as a 34-year-old guy. They're going to be extra careful with him. He missed a lot of last year because of the orbital fracture, but you know, this is something that he's toward the end of his career, and it's a lot like we see during the season. These guys aren't going to practice every day. Harrison's not going to practice every day, and they're just, as you said, trying to get him ready for September, not for July.
Yeah, you know, he had the two back procedures last year, and he had pretty much admitted that he wasn't himself. In fact, he called the fractured orbital bone a blessing when he talked to Jim Wexel, that he really needed that extra 4 weeks to get himself back. You know, let's look. This is a 15th, you know, the surgeon told him 15 to 18 month kind of healing process after him having those, distectomy, I think they call it, with the disc procedure in the back there. And this guy was back on the field week one last year. Now, of course, he wasn't the same person, but he still had a productive season, 10 and a half sacks or so, something like that. So you know, yeah, they're going to take it easy on him. But at the same time, people with back problems, they don't magically get better either, you know.
Exactly.
You know, so this is a thing that, and I think the Steelers are off season by not restructuring his contract when he was ready, willing, and able to do, kind of gives you an insight that they're thinking, hey, you know, maybe 2012, we're going to get what we can get out of him, and if we get anything more out of him, great. But, you know, now is the time. And Mark Gabaldi, I think, put it best this morning on Trib Live Radio. When he drops off, it's going to be a drop-off, brother, and then he's going to be out of the game. It's just not going to be one of these gradual things either. He's going to be able to go or he's not.
Yes, the nature of the way he plays the game, with so much aggression and so much pure athleticism and physical strength, as you say, it's going to be very telling. You either have that, you still have that, or you don't. And I'm dead with you on the 2012 thing. At his age, at his contract situation, this is, you know, look, as everybody knows who listens to us, we root for these guys. We try to look at it objectively. Everybody wants James Harrison to have a great year, and if he has a great year, maybe he comes back and has another great year. But if you're thinking about it from right here, where you're looking longer term, this may be James Harrison's last year in the black and gold. And as we've seen with this offseason, it happens to everybody at some point in time.
Absolutely, and that's just something to watch there. They're going to baby him, as we said, they're going forward. Now, Keith Butler also talked about some of the other younger linebackers yesterday as well, too, in his talk with the media. Sean Spence, this guy continues to flash, evidently. Keith Butler said he's coming along well, very sharp young man, picking up the system. And Butler was asked specifically, hey, will Sean Spence just be a special teams player this year, or does he have a chance to play some his rookie season? And Butler said, look, I'm not willing to rule out, basically, and I have this up on SteelersDepot.com, verbatim his quotes, and I believe his interviews on Steelers.com as well, basically saying he's not ready to rule out that Sean Spence is not going to see the field. It just won't probably be as a starter, and more than likely it'll be a lot like Lawrence Timmons and Lamar Woodley, their rookie seasons. Those guys were able to get on the field in certain situations, albeit not much in their rookie years, and of course they weren't starters, but he's not ruling him out hitting the field his rookie season in some form or capacity, shape or capacity. I don't think it's going to be the first 4 weeks, but as he picks up this, you know, the kid's smart. And he has that quick see to do that Mike Tomlin likes to talk about. It's evident on film. It's all about him picking up the defense, which he evidently is grasping very quickly, and that's going to be the big time frame there. Now, Chris Carter, you know, of course, he missed the OTA session last year because of the lockout, didn't get the on-the-field work, and Keith Butler was asked about him. And he says that he, too, is coming along very well. He just wishes that he could have had him, you know, the last offseason along with Jason Worlds. He says, look, Jason Worlds really improved during the season last year because that's the only time that he got reps on the field. He says, at least this year with Chris being a second-year guy, it's going to be vital time in his mind because these young guys, you know, they have somewhat of a better idea of what's going on with the defense, and they get a better evaluation on them. So that's some strong words from him, both those young guys. He also, remember these two were these two names, David, Adrian Robinson and Brandon Hicks. He called these guys, he didn't call them by name. He called them by the schools that they went to, Temple and Florida. But he did mention those two guys as guys that are flashing so far in shorts. But he also cautioned that, hey, it is in shorts, and everybody looks like a movie star or, you know, a celebrity when they're running around in shorts. So just keep those names tucked in the back of your head.
Yeah, that's good stuff, Dave. That's good information, because when a position coach goes out and talks about undrafted free agents, yeah, that's slightly unusual. So it's good to hear, you know, they feel like they have some young kids who maybe are under not only they're under everybody's radar, basically. They're there, and now they're on our radar, and we'll watch them as we go. Dave, the other guy who spoke a bit, and we've spent a lot of time in this offseason talking about the corners and our high expectations for Cortez Allen and Curtis Brown and Keenan Lewis, Carnell Lake got in front of the mic a little while.
Absolutely, and I tell you, anytime you can hear these coaches, position coaches, hey, that's why I said I'm like a kid in the candy store, because you just don't get this during the regular season. You get it after the draft, and you get it these points and times during the year. But Carnell basically went through all of his young corners and basically broke them all down. I had that complete article up on SteelersDepot.com as well, too. And he, you know, as far as Cortez Allen, he says he really showed some playmaking abilities last year. He points particularly to the Patriots game, saying he's able to play tight ends as well as small receivers man-to-man, and he thinks he's going to be able to utilize those talents again this year with the combined experience that he has, and that he should be a good part of our defense. And as far as Keenan Lewis goes, he says, well, Keenan Lewis has been there a while, understands the system now. He's a tall corner that can play both press and play off, and he's got tremendous ball skills to go along with that, according to Lake. He also added that, you know, when you combine all of those with the experience he got last year, he's really looking for some good things out of him. Perhaps the biggest thing that came out of his talk about the three young cornerbacks, when talking about Curtis Brown, he said that, you know, he showed his ability on special teams. Of course, there's no denying that. I mean, that's evident and documented, his ability on special teams, his natural abilities to make plays. He said as soon as he's starting to pick up the defensive system, and Lake says that when he really understands the system, he'll be able to contribute in a big way for us. So basically that tells me that, hey, you know, Curtis is a playmaker. This is a guy that's got extreme talent. We all seen how this kid can get downfield and tackle. He's flashed already, according to some of these media guys in the OTA sessions. It just looks like now the only thing that's kind of holding him back is just his understanding of the defense. But Carnell really had glowing comments of all three of these guys. Pretty much set the pecking order the way we've set all along here. Keenan Lewis is going to start outside opposite Ike Taylor, it looks like. Cortez is going to be your nickel guy, and it looks like Curtis Brown is going to be your next man up off the bench.
Yeah, and that's going into camp, and we'll see. Obviously, these guys will get a month to 6 weeks to see if they can change the order. But that's what you would expect based on how the season ended. You don't expect these guys to move things around in the offseason in terms of depth chart. You want guys to be at least perceived to have won jobs and earned positions. So as we've said all along, Keenan Lewis is going to have the inside shot, so to speak, at being the other starting corner. But as both you and I have said, and we're probably on opposite sides of who might get that job, neither of us would be surprised if come December, somebody else is holding that job, whether it be Curtis Brown or Cortez Allen.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, it's all week to week right now with these young corners, most definitely. I think that, face it, Keenan's got the on-the-field experience, and he should. I mean, this is a guy heading into his fourth year now. This is now or never for him, and they want to find everything about him that they can in this preseason and OTA session. So I think the only person that could challenge him on the outside is Cortez Allen. We talked about that in previous shows, but it's definitely going to be something to watch. I would not expect, unless Curtis Brown just flashes all over the place, which is possible, which he has done evidently during the OTA sessions, I really don't see him being the nickel guy unless just something major happens over the next 45 days or so.
Yep. Flip it over to the other side of the ball. Ben Roethlisberger, always a visible figure in Steeler camp. Didn't do a lot of work in the OTAs. But I thought the most interesting thing, Dave, that I heard out of Ben's mouth over the course of certainly this past week was he says basically if Todd Haley is saying something, I pretty much know where everybody should be. He said, I might not be ready to call a game right now, but I generally have a sense of how everything is going. So it's kind of exactly where you'd think things should be at this point in time. They've had the playbook since mid-April. So here we are, early June. It's been 6 weeks. Look, Ben's a football player. This is not rocket science. He's going to take a little time to get his arms around it. Now they go through and physically go through the reps. That's the big thing here, physically going through the reps, seeing the receivers run the routes, actually going out there and saying the words out loud in the huddle. Doing these things, it sounds like he's pretty comfortable with where they are. He talked about them running the ball. Hopefully they could be more efficient, kind of grind it for four quarters. And, of course, Ben always won to be sentimental, broke out the Max Starks 78 on Thursday.
Yeah, David, and you know, Todd Haley, he talked to the media this week as well, too. First time in a while that we've heard from him. He said everything that you would expect him to say. And everything's going, I think, according to plan. You know, Roethlisberger might be a little bit frustrated with this new language, which is to be expected. Todd Haley claims that he's not really sensing that frustration himself from Roethlisberger. A lot of Roethlisberger's comments we've talked about in the past, just Ben being Ben, defense mechanism, and all like that. But it sounds like what Roethlisberger just said recently, it sounds like what Todd Haley has said recently, it says that these guys are about probably where you would expect, because the language barrier is there, thus the comments with the Rosetta Stone and all like that. And as you put it, perfectly, you know, he just got this next week in mini camp is when Todd Haley says they're going to go back through everything that they've learned thus far and try to implement everything in there. So now's the time where we'll see where he'll know exactly where he's at as far as being able to transmit the verbiage, being able to make the reads that Haley wants them to make, communicate it out properly, and get everybody to to be in the right position on the field when that happens. So there's going to be some bumps yet to go next week, but you know, I think they're right where we'd expect them to be. And as far as him wearing the Max Starks number 78, hey, we knew that was coming. You know, You know, Max Starks is a good friend of his. He's a he's the only guy left from Roethlisberger's draft class. You know, this has been Ben once again trying to make a statement there. He thinks Max on track to be healthy, and that's not the last time we're going to see that number 78. I don't think all through training camp. I think you'll see it one or two times in addition. And as Roethlisberger tried to campaigns for the Steelers to re-sign Max Starks.
Yeah, I think Ben handled it very well. I don't know that it was as much a campaign or just an acknowledgement, as you said, to a guy who's been a good friend, who's been his protector, and a guy in his draft class. And I think Ben understands. He made it very clear. He said, "Look, if we have to go and do that, and if Max is healthy, obviously that's the key. But if we have to go and rely on a guy, then it's very possible Max could be the guy." So I thought Ben handled the whole thing very well. I loved your comments that you posted on Twitter, where Ben said he called DeCastro and asked him if he could help him arrange his flight in for the mini camp. I thought that was the funniest thing I read all week. Good to see he's having a sense of humor with that. And he said, look, he's looking forward to having the two young guys and seeing what they are. And he should be. He should be excited. The Steelers have really gone out and made an effort to improve the guys in front of Ben, to improve the guys who are protecting Ben, to have him be able to do his job better. So I'll bet he damn well is excited to see them and get a look to see how they look when they come in next week.
Absolutely, and he's not opposed to two rookies starting in front of him. He even said if these guys know what their job is and those are the guys that can protect and do the best job, then he's all for it. So, you know, and with Max Starks, that's a break glass in case of emergency. If Mike Adams, over next week in the start of training camp just does not seem to be grasping things, or perhaps maybe by the first or second preseason just is having I kind of relate it to Chris Scott last year. They tried their best to get that kid the job at both right guard and right tackle last year during the preseason. The kid just fell completely on his face. I think they're going to give Mike Adams every opportunity at left tackle. And Sean Coogler said as much, another great interview this week, that they want to try to have their starting five in place at the end of mini camp coming up next week there. And that means DeCastro at right guard. That means Mike Adams at left tackle. And Coogler also explained the reason that Marcus Gilbert has been getting some snaps over there at the left side. You know, if something was to happen and perhaps maybe Max Starks is not the backup plan or is not healthy, well, then at least Marcus Gilbert is not a surprise to him. At least he's gotten some reps over there at the left tackle spot, and then they can go from that point forward there. But
Dave, as you said, you got to have a contingency plan. You got to make
absolutely
sure. We've talked about dressing seven guys on Sundays, on game days. These guys have to be versatile. You got to be able to flip from one side to the other. We saw Jonathan Scott do it a bunch this year. Marcus Gilbert needs to be able to go over and be able to take snaps on the left side. So certainly with those two guys not here during the OTAs, not a surprise that they had all sorts of line combinations, did a lot of different things. These guys need to be able to play both sides. Gilbert can do it. Mike Adams can do it. The guys in the interior can do it. We know Ligurski's probably going to make the squad, particularly because of his versatility. So, this is no surprise.
Absolutely, and they want Mike Adams. They want those rookies to win these jobs, and they're going to give them every opportunity to do it. The good news is that both of them will be able to participate this next week in minicamp. And Coogler, you love to hear this guy talk. He looks like a guy that you just go get a beer with or a cup of coffee, in my case. But he said, look, these guys are asking all the right questions. He knows that they're studying the playbook with what they have because of the phone conversations that he's had with them. They can't BS around it because they're asking the right kind of questions. So that's great to really hear, being as how they were not able to participate in the 3 weeks of OTA sessions and they haven't been able to take part in anything since the rookie camp.
Yeah, and Dave, we should give a nod to a bunch of guys who make our life easier to do this. And I know we aggregate a lot of information from a lot of different sources, but the beat guys, of course, everybody knows Mark Cabali, Scott Brown, Mike Pursuta did a great job this week, Jim Wexel and Ed Bouchette all these guys are there every day giving us a lot of news, making our life easier so that we can do these podcasts and bring them to you. We've had a lot of these guys on the show, so just want to give them a heads up and thanks for their good work during the OTAs in the past couple weeks.
And Bob Labriola as well.
Of course, Bob of Steelers.com.
Boy, I tell you, that site, there was a time when Steelers.com, you hardly got any information on it. But, boy, now they the interview, like I said, this past week, man, I have poured through probably an hour and a half worth of audio and video. It's just been great. And it, like you said, it gives us it educates us more as well, too, and gives us more talking points to form these podcasts around. I couldn't imagine not having, the information that we get from the Pittsburgh media.
Yeah, Labs, Jerry Dulac, I'm sure I missed somebody, but we appreciate all the work those guys do. And a lot of the information we bring to our listeners is coming from those guys. So, credit where credit is due. Dave, the other thing in camp, we talked about this in the draft. I got really excited about it, and I still get excited about it when I think about it. The thing about Steeler football that we've seen over the last 30 years, people know they play tough physical football, and the Rooneys and Mike Tomlin are never going to get away from that. But one of the things we haven't seen, Dave, as long as you and I have been watching the Steelers, they have speed guys now on the outside. Mike Wallace is a speed guy that we've rarely seen in black and gold. But Chris Rainey just excites the hell out of me. He's a guy in this offense with Todd Haley. It's something that I think that Steeler fans are going to see that, again, is different. Trying to get guys in space, in good matchups, guys who are really fast. And Chris Rainey is going to be a burner. Just from what we've read, the people we've talked to, it feels like Chris Rainey's got a very good inside shot of making this squad. And I'm really looking forward to July, August, the preseason games, seeing what he can do with the ball in space, because it sounds like, with the 27 caveats of in shorts and all of that, that Chris Rainey looked good here in camp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every week you hear Chris Rainey's fast. Chris Rainey makes a move out in space, makes person miss here. Todd Haley's going to use him like a McCluster. I mean, let's face it. There's no two ways around it. How he's going to use him. It's just when will he use him, how early in the season. Rainey said right off the top that he was having no problems picking up the playbook. So you always like to hear that from a first-year player. Of course, his brain's not clouded with any of the old information, so that tends to make it a little easier on a young guy, I think. But, yeah, this is a guy that's exciting. And like you said, heading into mini camp and into training camp, this is a guy that you're going to keep hearing his name show up and reading his name and all these recaps and reports that I do and the other media do. And, I like to point to one guy, like a Darren Sproles type back. This is a guy that, although Rainey, I don't think, can run in between the tackles and all, this is a guy that definitely can come in and you can move him all over the place. The NFL is all about big plays, explosive plays. You've heard me talk about it tons of times. This is a guy that can get to rip you off 20 yards in a heartbeat.
Yeah, my list is getting longer, Dev. I keep talking about guys I'm going to look for in July, guys I'm excited to see in August. I mean, we've gone through the Emmanuel Sanders, the Ziggy Hoods, the two young corners, Chris Rainey, obviously the offensive lineman. It's a long list of guys to be excited about, and that's a nice way for me to segue into this hope-to-be 500 season that Warren Sapp seemed to have a comment about, and you got a little bit going with him on Twitter this week.
Yeah, Sapp, of course, last year was the old and slow comments, and now he comes out this year and says, lost too much experience in leadership now. So
this shit just kills me, by the way. This kills me. I mean, it's the national media, and I don't even know that I should count Warren Sapp as part of the intellectual national football media. He's not Adam Schefter or Chris Mortensen. He's an analyst who he's more Charles Barkley-esque without kind of the humor, I think. But, people close to the game know the guys the Steelers released were not big contributors at the end of the season or most of last season. And when they guys say things like that, certainly leadership, there's something to be said for that. I will nod to the leadership of James Ferrier and to Hines Ward. But this is a locker room that's always been a very strong locker room with a very strong coaching staff. And so, you and I got to chuckle when Sapp starts going off again.
Yeah, and, Ike Taylor and Larry Foote talked about him this past week on the Ike Taylor Show, and kind of where the root of all his, kind of distaste for the Steelers come from, of course, dating back to that 2002 game, Monday night game against the Buccaneers, when Sapp goes dancing through the stretch line.
And I love that. And for those of you who haven't seen it, Dave has a post up telling the story. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Jason Gilden and Joey Porter basically snatched him and Nate Webster by the neck at that time, and Larry Foote does a great job of telling this, and I have the audio up on the site as well too. And heading into that was the old Lee Flowers paper champion talk as well too with Warren Sapp, and I think Sapp still got that bad taste in his mouth. And plus, he sent me a direct message through Twitter. I'm not sure if he was kidding or not. He said, well, I'm a Cowboys fan too, so that could have a lot to do with it. I invited Warren to come on a Terrible Podcast. I have not heard back from him yet, and I made sure he saw those comments. He responded back to me after I made sure he saw what Ike Taylor and Larry Foote had to say the other day. He responded back to me, and it's up on Twitter. He says, Ike Taylor played the worst game in NFL history as a defensive back. Bigger issues, says Sapp. Who's the other guy, he asked. I need a photo and bio. Obviously talking about Larry Foote there. So, come on, a lot of hype,
Yeah, he's allowed to have fun with it, too, and obviously.
We've been good-natured. We haven't been no name-calling on here, but to say Ike Taylor had the worst game in NFL history as a defensive back against the Denver Broncos, I mean, it was a bad game, but worse than NFL history, I don't think so.
Well, that's hyperbole on Twitter, so no big deal there, but I love the story. And, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a bad week for Nate Webster, right?
This guy, Nate Webster.
I was reading your post, and I was like, wow. I haven't seen his name in years.
Yeah, this guy went to jail, of course, played for the Bengals, too, after a time when Tampa Bay having sex with an underage girl.
Let's just leave it
there. Yeah, geez, what more can you say?
I guess you'd rather be known for dancing through the Steelers stretch line than the other thing. So I was reading your post, and I was like, boy, here's a name I haven't heard in a bunch of years, and now I see him twice in a week, and neither of them are good.
Hey, Warren Sapp was on Dancing with the Stars. Nate Webster's going to be dancing with the soap.
Oh, all right. Moving on. Oh, Jesus, Dave. Okay. Well, Dave, so, I mean, that kind of does the OTAs. Now, we go into minicamp. Minicamp is mandatory. That's I'm just pulling my calendar up here. That's next week, and it is in terms of days, it's Monday through Thursday. Is that right?
I believe it is. I'm gonna have to double check on those dates. I don't have them in front of me. It might very well be Tuesday through Thursday.
It is. It's Tuesday through Friday, the 12th through the 5th, the 12th through the 14th. 3 days: Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, and Thursday. 12th through the 14th. Like the OTAs have been. That's mandatory. Of course, everybody is expected to be there except Mike Wallace, and we've talked about the injuries and who will be doing what. So Worlds and Harrison probably light. But as you said, came through the OTAs unscathed, and they'll go into the mini camp, and we'll see more of that stuff put in. And then they kind of get to put it to bed for 6 weeks. Ziggy Hurdle will go into phase four of his workout scheme, and these guys will start really prepping to come into camp.
44 days and counting, I think, today. I think Ed Bouchette reported yesterday. Steelers report to Latrobe on July 25th. And now I'm speculating here, of course. Don't go setting up your travel plans based on information that you heard on the Terrible Podcast. But kind of speculating out, I think the Friday night lights practice at Latrobe Memorial Stadium will likely take place on August 3rd, looking back at past schedules and all. Once again, always check Steelers.com for the most up-to-date and accurate information as far as training camp schedule. And that should be released, I'm guessing, next week is when they're going to release the official training camp dates and schedule and all like that.
Around the league, Dave, a couple pieces of news. Chad Ochocinco gets released by the Patriots. I thought it was somewhat humorous the way it was announced by Adam Schefter. They said, after spending the day trying to trade him, the Patriots have released Chad Ochocinco on Thursday. Now, there are a couple things interesting there. I can't imagine that was a six-hour process. You probably looked into that for some period of time. But at this point in camp, people aren't going to give up anything of value for Ocho Cinco. I think at the end of the day, the numbers were the Patriots paid him about $5.7 million and gave up a fifth-rounder this year that turned into a wide receiver for the Bengals. I think the kid from Cal and a sixth-rounder next year. So they didn't get a lot of production out of him. I think he caught one touchdown, had 20-some catches or something like that. But the only thing that I got a little bit annoyed about on Twitter yesterday was people were ripping him for being a bad guy. And look, he was not productive in New England. There are no two ways around that. But he was a good teammate. He went in. He didn't really get the playbook. I don't know if that's an intellectual thing or whatever, but it was a different system for him. It wasn't a good fit. It didn't work out. But, you know, he kind of kept it under wraps last year with the Patriots, was a good citizen, and went in there, he wanted to win, didn't work. I think somebody will take a shot at him. I don't imagine he'll be a productive receiver in the NFL going forward, but I would certainly expect him to be in camp with somebody come July.
Boy, when they drop off, they drop off, don't they? He had in 2010 with the Bengals 67 receptions. Last year he had 15 receptions with the Patriots. So, you know, the guy's a colorful guy. He's entertaining. He hasn't always been one of my favorite. Sometimes I think he's relied on his talent and his ability for so long that when Father Time's undefeated.
Undefeated.
Yeah, and Father Time has caught up with him now. It takes more for athletes when they get older like this. You know, it takes more for you to keep on top of your game to be the best in the league. And I'm just curious with his fast food diet that he claims to be on. Hey, I don't know his workout ethic and all like that, but you know, maybe this will be a slap in the face. Maybe he's about ready to hang him up. Maybe he's about ready to go into broadcasting. Someone might take a chance on him once, you know, maybe an injury or two hits, but this late in the off season right now, do you really bring a guy in like that who's not going to play special teams for you?
Well, I don't think it hurts you to bring him in. I mean, you know, somebody's going to bring him in. You can take a look, see what he has. Dave, isn't it interesting? You look back at that 2009-10 Bengals teams, and you really feared Usman Zada and Ocho Cinco. They really were a dynamic pair, and boy, as you said, the end came fast for both of them.
Yeah, hardly anywhere to be seen the last few years, both Usman Zada and Ocho Cinco. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. That's two wide receivers
We talked about that list of 10 guys they had in there, and you figured, you know, how are they going to bring all these guys in? How are they going to get the reps in preseason? Well, Anthony Gonzalez and Chad Ocho Cinco, they're not getting the reps.
Yeah, and Gronk got paid.
Gronk got paid, and boy, it looks like a team-favorable deal. Now, there's a lot of guaranteed money here. He's set for life now. He has been a fantastic player. But, you know, you look at that, and you look at kind of the numbers that Mike Wallace is potentially talking about or potentially going to get, and you feel like the Patriots made a really good deal here.
Well, let's face it, the guy's one of the top, if not the best tight end right now in the league right now. So locking that guy up long term. I wonder how Wes Welker's feeling, though.
You're damn right. You know, the good thing is Wes Welker knows he's making, you know, $9.2 million this year, worst case. The bad thing is, you know, who knows what he's making 2 years from now.
Yeah, I just, you know, they keep saying they want to get a, you know, kind of lock him up. But you throw that much money at Gronk, even though it does look, and looking at these deals in 140 characters on Twitter is kind of tough to do. We'll know when that contract hits the NFLPA. I think he still had 2 years left on his deal, Gronk did?
Yeah, I think they got him now for eight years and something like $70 million or something.
Yeah, so they rolled some stuff in there, the new money. Of course, the signing bonus is the big thing to look at there. But the big thing is they've got him locked up now.
And it made sense. You know, as you said, it's exactly the philosophy. Look, the Steelers do the same thing. Those guys who are under 30, they're going to get the big contract. They're going to get paid. The guys who are over 30, and I'm looking at you, Wes, a little tougher to get paid. So that was interesting news. I don't think we talked about, Dave, last week. The Ravens got hit again. The injury bug has hit them pretty hard in the offseason. The outside linebacker, McAdoo, who was going to be battling for playing time with Suggs out. He's a guy who missed all of last season as well on the injured reserve. He tore his ACL, and he's going to be out for the year.
Yeah, they the injuries keep mounting up for them now, and I mean, you could have the rookie there, Courtney Upshaw, very well be your week one starter. You know, if he's able to win out, and don't forget they lost Jarrett Johnson, the other outside linebacker in free agency. That other kid that they drafted, who is the one that keeps falling down the stairs, and
Sergio Kindle.
Yeah, he's the one that too that they really hasn't performed up to par just yet.
Yeah, he's the guy, second round pick out of Texas, and had high expectations. Missed both his first two seasons now, and I guess hasn't looked fantastic in their OTAs. And we'll probably get a chance here over the next couple weeks to get some of the guys who covered the AFC North teams in the OTAs and just get an update on where things stand when these teams go into camp as well.
You know, the biggest thing too is all the people that are missing. Boy, could you imagine if I think it was something like 18 or 20 players of theirs not at OTAs?
Yeah, how about that? I mean, holy Jesus, stink! I mean,
boy, if the Steelers did that. Oh my God! The media. You want to talk about the media already? Even the national media. Not only let's leave the local media out. What they would say? Can you imagine what the national media would be saying if you had that many guys out of Steelers OTAs and mini camps and all like that? Oh man, the world would be collapsing. And but yet it's not a big deal when the Ravens do it, who have quite a bit of changeover, especially on the defensive side of the ball this year.
Yep, and you know, we'll get into that a little more. I'm surprised it wasn't a bigger story nationally, but yeah, that is certainly interesting stuff when that many guys aren't there. Dave, the other story that I'm a bit tired of, and now that the numbers have come out and been public, this whole idea how the Saints are really screwing over Drew Brees just really annoys me. Look, they've offered the guy $19 million. He wants a little bit north of 20, so they're something like $2 million apart. It's not a big deal. Certainly length of the contract's going to be an issue, but I just have trouble really feeling bad for a guy who's offered 19 and he wants 20 and a half.
I don't know what – I don't know. Hey, pay the dude.
He's been the guy. He's done great things for him. It's just one of these things where I guess the way I look at it is there's a process and everybody's going through the process. Let's not feel too aggrieved about anybody getting screwed over. Let's see where we are come July 31st. Let's see where we are come September 1st. This is something that's more than likely going to get done, but you know, it is what it is. How about these teams screwing up the OTAs and getting practices taken away from them? I guess the NFL is looking at the Saints practices, looking at the video of the Saints practices to see what might have gone on and maybe are going to penalize them. And I think they cut two practices from the Raiders.
The Seahawks.
I mean, what the hell are these guys doing?
Yeah, Pete Carroll breaking the rules. Who knew?
What a thunk.
But, yeah, they lost, and they can't get those back either. And I don't know if some of this stemmed from kind of the mixing it up physically with the fights.
They had some contact, yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, Moore's going to come out pretty soon. And I believe these have to be taped anyway, right?
Yep.
All these practices have to be taped. Every day you're going to have to send off – well, we live in a digital age now. Everything's instantaneous there. You're going to have 32 reps sitting in all these rooms across the country watching each practice live. And then, the coaches will have to wear buzzers on them like the referees during the replays. And they're going to buzz them down and say, no, 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 you can't do that, you know. I guess that's where it's coming to. That's the only thing I can kind of think of the way this is headed.
Yeah, you know, it's just all these teams.
That's over the top, I know. But, I mean, I don't know. We don't know what's going on in there. And for these teams to keep getting docked like that, and they keep after the Saints and all, I don't know.
Yeah, these guys all know the rules. That's just stupid stuff, in my opinion. They shouldn't be making mistakes like that. The penalties aren't that severe, but as you said, you don't get the practices back, so it just means extra work in camp or whatever. So that, you know, it's just dumb stuff. You'd think guys would know better. But the other thing, Dave, an article posted last night by Jason Cole on Yahoo Sports, Steelers safety Troy Polamalu reflects on the simplistic approach of Jets QB Tim Tebow, which obviously at the time was Denver QB Tim Tebow, and just talks about a little bit during the game how there were so many things Tebow did that were very veteran-esque, and then there were other things that were very rookie-esque. And Cole says, you know, that's a great way to describe. And he goes on and talk. Troy talks about, you know, genuinely being interested in Tebow as an individual and the things he believes in. And we know Troy has a very strong faith. So, you know, for our readers who are out there on looking at things on the internet, you might want to take a look at that. You know, nothing earth shattering, but, you know, Troy's take on Tim Tebow.
What about Santurio Holmes? You read it?
Santonio, he's a little overworked.
Yeah. Do you bleed? Hey, we're all those people now that were crying that we got rid of now for a fifth-round pick that we turned into a sixth-round. Anyway, basically turned that pick into Antonio Brown. Boy, the Steelers knew what they were doing when they cut him. When they turned him loose. Now, I know he had the suspension hanging over his head. He also had he's going into his final year of his contract. They weren't going to be able to keep him after that, but – man, the more you hear about Santonio, man, this guy, that's not what you need on a team.
Yeah, so, Santonio making waves again. It just that apparently is not going to change. All right, Dave, a lot of ground covered here, about 50 minutes. Anything before we wrap it up and come back on Tuesday when the Steelers get back at minicamp?
Yeah, it's a little bit of breaking news today for our horse racing people and all like that. The horse I'll Have Another was going for the Triple Crown this week. He's been scratched from the Belmont. Now, you're saying, how does this relate to football? Well, the Onion reports that I'll Have Another injured his leg during a pickup basketball game.
Terrell Suggs and I'll Have Another.
Right, but he injured his leg during a pickup basketball game. I'm sure I'll Have Another will deny that and say he injured it while doing
falling down the stairs.
Yeah, either falling down the stairs or getting ready for OTA sessions. But I found that kind of amusing. We covered quite a bit today. We left a lot off the table that we'll get to next week, including Sean Spence and how some other things that Kevin Colbert and Keith Butler said about him. But I think we packed this one pretty full today, Dave.
Great stuff, as always. Everybody out there, I know you follow Steelers Depot, but make sure you get to the website. Not only Dave, but the people who are helping him out, posting stuff on there. There's, you know, just full of information on a daily basis. And again, great work on the Ziggy Hood stuff and Bill Nickel, having him on Tuesday. That really looks great. And seeing all the stories that followed, people following your stuff. Our listeners, thank you again for the generosity and the donations. I think I've gotten emails out to most of you. There are a couple I haven't, and I'll get to that, but it's much appreciated. You can see the button on SteelersDepot.com, or you can hit on PayPal. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter. Dave's at Steelers Depot. I'm at Hammer Speaks. And Dave, anything before we close it?
No, email theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. The show's on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. You can find the show on iTunes. You can find the show on the TuneIn radio app as well, too, which is a free app. So we appreciate everybody's support, and we'll be back at everybody Tuesday.
And that's a wrap. Season 2, episode 115. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.